With so many religions in the world today, how can we know which, if any, is true? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is Religion on Trial, Examining Religious Truth Claims. It's written by regular guest Craig Parton. Learn more about Religion on Trial at IssuesETC.org or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Religion on Trial by Craig Parton.
Heard about a job. Big shot gangster putting together crew.
I'm a driver. And I'm a flyer. I waited a long time for a shot like this.
What do you think? Well, what do you know?
You got a line on a ship?
Yeah, I know a guy. He's the best smuggler around.
I heard a story about you. I was wondering if it's true.
Everything you've heard about me is true.
L3!
Let's go with a mean man's face.
Who are these guys?
If you come with us, you're in this life for good.
You might wanna buckle up, baby.
Here they come! Let me give you some advice. Assume everyone will betray you, and you will never be disappointed.
There's a little bit of the trailer of the next Star Wars movie that was out just last weekend to much fanfare and some boycotting. People say they simply won't go see it. Why is that? It's Solo, a Star Wars story, telling the backstory of the famous Star Wars character Han Solo. It's got the ship. It's got Han Solo. It's got a Wookiee. It's got Lando Calrissian. It's got just about everything. It does not have, by the way, the Force. Is it still a Star Wars movie without the Force? Joining us to review the movie Solo, a Star Wars story, Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
Does this new Star Wars film, it's got a lot of challenges and hurdles that it's got to jump, but probably the biggest one in the minds of dyed-in-the-wool Star Wars fans is the main character is not played by Harrison Ford. Does it overcome that hurdle?
Yes and no. I think that this Alden Ehrenreich does a very good job. He's, you know, it's a very promising portrayal of Han Solo. And the other thing is that Harrison Ford's a really great actor, but he just can't play himself at that age. So it would be very hard for him to be in this movie. So in one way, yes, you know, he does a very good job, this Alden Ehrenreich, who people probably don't know at all. I mean, his big substantial role before this was in Hail Caesar, the Coen brothers movie that we did a review of from a couple years ago now. So he, you know, he's kind of an unknown. So that kind of goes in his favor because he's able to come at it with less baggage, but, you know, and he does a good job. So it's a very different portrayal. The whole character of Han Solo in this film is different than what people have experienced before, because he's more optimistic and ambitious and agreeable, you know, as a character. So I think there's enough different about this earlier version of Han Solo than what people were used to. The question is how does this all bridge together, and how do you get from point A to point B? How does that work? So it's kind of a mixed bag, but I think that he does a good job in it. And the film, you know, he's just not a Harrison Ford. Like, Harrison Ford can carry a film, and he's just not there yet.
Does it overcome the hurdle of sticking to the Star Wars canon?
That's also kind of interesting too, because there are bits and pieces from the original Star Wars films that came out in the late 70s and early 80s that, you know, were in the dialogue and stuff hinted at. So you have different things like, you know, Han Solo didn't always have the Millennium Falcon. Lando Calrissian had it at one point. So that's going to be part of a story. And they cover that kind of stuff in this. So they have to, you know, hold to certain things. So they do a good job at some of that stuff, but it's almost like a, they don't take a lot of risks with it. So it's kind of more like a paint by number version of what you might imagine the backstory of Han Solo would be. There's not as many surprises as maybe you'd like, or as many twists or risks in it. I mean, they're all kind of rogues and scoundrels, and they're taking more risks in the plot of the film than the filmmakers made when they made the movie in the first place.
Does it find itself in the context of, since it is a prequel, in the context of the bigger story that Star Wars is always telling about the Empire and the various iterations of all of the galactic evil?
Yeah, it does. And it's set like 10 years before the first Star Wars film. So A New Hope, the first one that chronologically came out. So A New Hope, which came out in 1977. So it's set 10 years before that. So it's the Han Solo who exists 10 years before they meet him in Tatooine in the Mos Eisley's cantina. So that's, and the Empire is expanding and there's stuff going on with that. And it's part of that story. But then, like what we're talking about with Star Wars canon, when you first meet Han Solo, he really doesn't know much about the Force or Jedi or anything like that. And he kind of poo-poos all of the idea of that. And he says, I've never seen anything to do with that. You know, he may have known about it, but he didn't see personally anything about it. So in this film, there's no mention of the Jedi. There's no Jedi-related stuff in it. So it's kind of like you take the quote-unquote religious aspect of Star Wars out of it, and it really just focuses in on the crime boss, gangster, smuggler kind of crime world element of it, and then it kind of goes in and out of stuff dealing with the Empire here and there. But that's kind of the way it all kind of comes together.
What story is it telling? Is it Star Wars worthy kind of epic story?
It's a little smaller. It's not a, you know, a big gigantic epic kind of thing. It's more of a personal story. You get Han Solo as a younger guy escaping Corellia, the planet he was from. He's kind of like in the slums of the Imperial, you know, naval shipyards where they're building the big ships. And he's been working for, or been in the quote-unquote sort of, I'm using air quotes, employ of this Fagin-esque kind of crime boss, Lady Proxima, played by Linda Hunt. And he breaks away from that, and he's got a girlfriend, Emilia Clarke, who played this character named Kira. And they're trying to escape, get away, get their own ship, get on with their own life. But of course, they came from a life of crime, so they want to be kind of big-time criminals, as it were. So this is the story of him like leaving the slums and trying to become a hotshot pilot smuggler. And he gets mixed up with the Empire at one point. He gets mixed up with other smugglers and eventually meets characters like Lando Calrissian and the whole, you know, Kessel Run thing that he kind of briefly mentions in the original Star Wars film. He, you know, that's part of the plot of it. And it's kind of like him, you know, not quite a fish out of water, but him kind of getting some chops when it comes to the smuggling end of things.
To what degree is the ship, I mean, central to the character and his personality, that has been featured in every single one of the films, the Millennium Falcon, is it the star of the film?
You know, you could almost go that way with it. I ran across somebody who said that they thought maybe this movie should have been just all about the Millennium Falcon and then just little bits and pieces of different people who owned it over different times. But what you get here is it's part of the film. It's an important part in some cases to the film, but it's not the main character of the film, or it doesn't spend a lot of time on it. You do have this kind of back and forth and like getting a little bit of the story of how it ends up with Han Solo as opposed to Lando Calrissian.
One of the things that kind of made the first incarnation of the character Han Solo in those first three films so lovable to everybody and intriguing was he was a rogue with a heart of gold. He was avarice. He was dishonest. He was constantly being chased by people because of his dishonesty. Mm-hmm. But I take it that that's not necessarily a big part of this character.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is like the Harrison Ford, and you don't even notice it necessarily until you've, you know, had repeat viewings, and I'm sure lots of people have. He's also like the Harrison Ford version of Han Solo that we all kind of knew along the way here. He's also like a grump. Like he's impatient with people. He'll call people out on things. He rolls his eyes and shakes his fingers at things. He's totally curmudgeonly, actually. And if he wasn't so handsome and charming, like it probably wouldn't fly, but it does, right? He's an irascible kind of character. And that aspect of the character isn't in this film as much. Like he's much more positive and outgoing, and you know, he's not got that jaded quality yet. So the writers of this, Jonathan Kasdan and Lawrence Kasdan. Lawrence Kasdan, of course, has written for Star Wars for quite a while. They're a father-son team, and they did the screenplay for this film. They've really made this kind of more agreeable kind of Han Solo here. So, you know, and it was kind of let slip in an interview that there's additional Han Solo movies potentially that could be in the works. So in terms of a writing kind of a scenario, like it seems like what they've done is they've set up this kind of like a before picture, and you've got a after picture once you finally run into Han Solo again, but they need to bridge the one to the other. So they didn't do it in one film. They didn't like, he didn't end where Han Solo starts when we run into him in A New Hope. So really they've got like, I guess if possible, if they do it, they get two more movies to like continue that character arc until they get to the down and out Han Solo, who's cranky but a lovable rogue. The other thing that they do is they do have him, it's spelled out very clearly that he's a good guy. You don't know that when you meet him in the very first Star Wars movie. You don't know if he's, if that's your entryway into Star Wars, you don't know if he's a good guy or not. He's just a guy who's there that they need to get off the planet. And you don't know if he's going to turn out to be good or not.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We are reviewing the movie Solo, A Star Wars Story. When we come back, we'll talk about a couple of the other characters that appeared in the first Star Wars films and are reappearing in this prequel. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. Is dressing up to be there too. Just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
What does it mean to be a man? More importantly, what does it mean to be a man of God? In its June issue, the Lutheran Witness aims to help readers dig more deeply into the Bible's vision of men set free. Free to be loving husbands, caring fathers, bold proclaimers of the gospel, and self-sacrificial images of Jesus Christ. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Planned Parenthood said that they want to help the communities, especially the black community, even though their founder, Margaret Sanger, said, and I'm paraphrasing them just a little bit, colored people are like weeds that need to be exterminated.
The one who forgave you all your sins with his blood, he is not abandoning you to the grave. No, he's not going to forget you. He's made you his own.
You can't sustain a Christian ethic apart from Christian theology. If you try to do this, you're living off of inherited capital.
When we hold to the good godly distinctions between men and women in Scripture, it should be no surprise to us that in the same way that preaching the Word of God clearly makes us isolated from all the rest of the world.
Just a little taste of the four sound bites we'll be playing for you in less than an hour. We'll play Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week. In the meantime, we're reviewing the movie Solo, A Star Wars Story. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. I'm intrigued by the other big character that appears here, at least from the other Star Wars films, and that's Lando Calrissian. He's kind of another version of the Solo character. What do you make of this movie's depiction of that character?
Yeah, you know, there's that little part in Empire Strikes Back where, you know, he's having his disagreements with Darth Vader, and Darth Vader says, you know, pray that I don't alter the agreement, you know, any further. And this poor, Lando Calrissian character has been altered. And maybe it's not super, super duper obvious. I guess it is in a couple ways. They all have to kind of, if you're going to do this kind of thing where it's a decade between meeting them and you want to like grow them from one place to another, then some of it makes sense. But he's a fop. He's not that, he's a kind of a lightweight character in a way. A lot of people are really liking this version because Donald Glover does a good job with Lando Calrissian with what he was given. He even like gets the cadence of the voice right in a couple spots that are, it's pretty good. But here, you know, he's transformed from being a ladies man, you know, to being a pansexual, apparently, that and he's got like a, it's kind of hinted at or whatever, or talked about that he's having a relationship with his droid L337. But then they really do have the reveal where it seems like he actually loves that droid, and it's kind of weird. So this is not the Lando Calrissian that people first met. If anybody's got like the, it's him and his droid have got the social justice warrior short end of the stick in this film.
What about the beginning of the relationship that is probably the iconic friendship of the Star Wars movies, which is Han Solo and Chewbacca?
This is like the best part. Like, really, it's one of the best parts of the film. The initial meeting of the two, and like for those people who have not, we've kind of spoiled some things along the way here, but for those people who have not seen it, I'm not going to give you a description of exactly how it happens, but it is by far the best part. In fact, that 15, 20 minutes of the film, kind of bracketing around that, is some of the best stuff in the movie. It's charming. It does what you think you know about it in a way that is interesting, and it's very charming, enjoyable portion of the film.
Okay, a couple kind of technical questions here. The eventual director of credit, I believe, is Ron Howard. So I take it that he was not the original director of the film. You're not particularly impressed with Howard's treatment of this film. How would you describe that?
He's a workaday director. He gets the job done. You ask him to do something, he'll do it. I hate to say this, but he just doesn't have a lot of flash and sizzle. It doesn't happen very often that he has like a real rip-roaring movie. Like Apollo 13 was great. That was a really great movie of his. We did a review of that film Rush that he did about the Formula One race car racing stuff, and that was a little even above average for him. But then he also does like the Da Vinci Code movies, and a lot of them are just kind of, they're not B films, but they're like, if it was a grade in school, it would be like a B and not an A+, right? And I don't know what to do about that. It's all very, it's technically well done. The pacing is, you know, okay. It just, you know, lacks some sparkle. I mean, another thing too is that it's kind of hampered in a couple other ways. Like, it just doesn't have like the same kind of score that like sometimes the Star Wars movies are really pumped up and improved by the score, like the actual orchestral score. And this film kind of doesn't have that going for it. The original directors, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, were they had real problems with Kathleen Kennedy, who is kind of the show, like, quote unquote, the showrunner, I guess you could think of, for like all of the Star Wars movies, in the same way that there's a guy who does all of the Marvel movies and a guy that does all of the Disney live action movies. They had real problems, and they were the guys that did the Lego movie that was such a big hit. And I guess they were just more free flow, and, you know, they were kind of a little scattered, and it was freaking out Disney. So they wanted somebody who was like not going to be super scattered. And, you know, Ron Howard's the guy. Like, you want him to come in and do a job, he'll do the job.
Did I hear you say that they had to reshoot most of this movie after Howard took over?
Well, some reports say that they reshot up to 70% of it, which is a lot. And it was very expensive. So this is where the folks over at Star Wars have got to be a little bit, at Disney particularly, got to be a little bit worried about this, because they really need to like hit $1 billion for each one of these movies to get back the money in their investment. And this one is not performing as well. And I mean, there's literally a boycott because of fans who are displeased and dissatisfied with The Last Jedi, the Rian Johnson film that we had also did a review of. So, you know, like, there are people who are literally not going to the theater to see it. Like, they are not going to see it. And Disney has a problem, because if I just use myself as an example, like the Force Awakens, I think I saw it 3 times in the theater. Rogue One, I enjoyed Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. I saw that a couple times in the theater. That was good. The Last Jedi I saw once, and I haven't even purchased it on Blu-ray or anything. Like, and normally I would do that. And I might have seen, like, most Star Wars movies I've seen dozens of times. And I you know, I don't even want to look at it again. So this is a better movie than The Last Jedi. Not maybe quite, it's not as good as Rogue One, but I don't know, like, they're losing core audience, and they got to figure out what they're doing. And sadly, they're kind of also including maybe like a Marvelization, like, it's working for Marvel, so let's do it over here with Star Wars. I don't know if that business plan translates.
Well, they've done it before. I mean, they took a 3-movie wandering off on their own to babble silently to themselves by doing the prequels, didn't they?
Well, those ones were done by George Lucas and Lucasfilm, so that was before Disney was involved in it at all. But, I mean, boy, some of those movies are starting to look pretty good. It's a very strange thing. I realize that there's fickleness out there in the fan base, and we've talked about it before at different times, this idea of like a nerd bubble, like a, you know, a geek bubble. Like, at some point this may all just go poof, and, you know, people aren't going to be interested in these kinds of films anymore. It seems like they're churning them out, and they're not being as careful as they need to be. Like, in the past, they used to be, like, when the original ones came out and even the prequels, I think there were like 3 years between movies. So they were taking their time to make them. Now there's like, they're kind of moving towards the Marvel model, where they're going to have maybe even 2 or 3 a year. The question is like, if it's what you want, then there's no fatigue. But if right now there seems to be fatigue, and maybe it's because it's just, you're not getting what, like, as audience members, you're not getting what you want.
Finally, you mentioned that this movie makes no reference to the Jedi, or, and I take it then, therefore, to the Force. Can you tell a Star Wars story without the Force?
You know, I think you can. I mean, there's a lot going on. Even they could have, there's a couple more stories worth of stuff you could wring out of Han Solo without getting into the Force at all. At the end of the film, they introduce a character who has a connection to the Force. And I don't even know that they needed to do that. And maybe the way that they did it wasn't the best. Maybe they could have teased it a little bit along the way in the film itself. But as far as the Han Solo character is, this is really more of a character film, like, where they're trying to work on his character in these scenarios, and like, to get you to know what he's like as a person, and kind of pointing forward to something. So him as a character in these prequel kind of like to the original films, if they make more than one of these, because he so sets it up that he doesn't know anything about that stuff, it's fine. I think that they can do that with this. But boy, you know, like there's not nearly as many lightsaber fights as necessary for your general audience. Even in some of these other, like The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, there's not maybe as much as you'd like to have in there. Like I know some people would have, and I personally would have liked to have seen Luke Skywalker have more to do in The Last Jedi. I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that you can do it because this isn't really part of the saga, as it were. It's like saga adjacent.
Ted, before we let you go, as a pastor viewing this, with the potential of many Christian viewers going to see it, especially also with their kids, they want to pass that along to their kids. What would your pastoral concerns / advice be?
Well, there's one character in it, Tobias Beckett, played by Woody Harrelson, and he's the jaded smuggler character. And he basically, the bright and shiny Han Solo, he tells him, you know, don't trust anyone. And basically, don't trust anyone, don't even trust me. And that really brings up or sets it up for parents with kids to maybe talk about trust. Like, who can you trust? Who should you not trust? That kind of thing. Also, like, what does it mean to trust in someone or something? For instance, what does it mean to trust in God? So like in the Psalm 9, put your trust in the Lord, you know, because he has not forsaken those who seek him. Can you trust God? Who should you trust? That's worth talking about. Also, you know, this is one of those Seventh Commandment kind of films because they're all criminals and smugglers and they're all, you know, double crossing and stealing things from each other and from other people. So, you know, just maybe a review of the Seventh Commandment, I mean, in light of the actual lives that we lead, that would also be something worth taking a look at. Apart from that, I mean, like, it's not exactly a scary movie. It has fewer scary moments in it than maybe some other Star Wars movies would have.
You can read Pastor Ted Geese's review of Solo, A Star Wars Story, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, is brought to you in part today by Concordia University, Wisconsin. They offer 50 online educational options for an associate's, a bachelor's, or a master's degree. And they'll even waive your application fee when you use the promo code ISSUES. Just click the Concordia University, Wisconsin online logo at issuesetc.org. When we come back, we're going to talk about second century martyr Justin with Pastor Will Whedon, and we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The third commandment teaches us to remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. We do this when we hold God's word sacred and gladly hear and learn it. Jesus invites the weak and heavy laden to rest in him, our true rest, because his yoke is easy and his burden is light. This weekend, rest in Jesus as you hear his word and receive his gifts. If you are in Southern Illinois, you're invited to join Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstatt to rest in the grace of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Learn more at trinitymillstatt.org.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.